going on, everybody? This is the Aesop Guy. We are on a journey to an Aesop and beyond, enjoying season five. We have so much to talk about and so little time. And I want to kick off so we can use our time wisely right now with this.
Just sour grapes.
WrestleMania 2 is history, and this man is still the Intercontinental Champion. He's from Sarasota, Florida. What's with the broom? Wait a minute. What is the
professional wrestling completely clean? Oh, yeah. Doing the thing, yeah. Like nobody ever does before. Yeah. Tito Santana, it's been a while since I saw you in the Boston Garden. And I think that you believe that even though you're headhunting, that you can't beat the Macho Man Randy Savage. And you know Hulk Hogan? Yeah, if he wants to keep an eye on me, don't look behind you, Hulk Hogan. No, don't look in front. Don't look to the sides. Look straight up, because I'm right on top of you. Yeah.
Oh, Elizabeth. My dear, how are you?
Hi, you look gorgeous as usual. Thank you very much.
Well, you're more than welcome. How are things going for you?
Oh, great. Everything's super.
Yeah, when you get into New York City, you have an opportunity to do a little shopping.
Oh, yes. Browsing. I really enjoy that.
Unbelievable. Excuse me. Just let me interrupt us for a second. I'm just standing here. I'm holding a gold belt, the Intercontinental Heavyweight Championship belt. I'm only the champion. You guys got a conversation going.
We're talking back and forth.
It's like the most important man in the world standing here, and you got a conversation going with each other. Now explain to me. Put that thing down. Don't degrade the champion at any time. A man in my position could never afford to look ridiculous. Do you understand that? Tell Tito Santana.
Oh, yeah. Tito Santana. This is the Randy Macho Man Savage. Oh, yeah. Let me tell you something, brother. It's coming down. All right. I just have to confess that I watched wrestling when I was a kid, and Randy Macho Man Savage was one of my childhood heroes. My mother probably wanted to just kick us out of the house because me and my brothers would literally break furniture. And yeah, that's what happens. So, you know, once I realized this was actually not real, I don't know. I don't know how I dealt with that. I can't really tell you, but I will say that it is like the most entertaining like sense of things. So why would we be talking about Randy Macho Man Savage on the Journey to an Aesop? Well, the reason is because there's this thing that happens with every Aesop closing, and it's called a takedown or bring down call. And I've talked about this for a little while now with Aesop deals. And the first off is, like, what is a takedown bring down call? So it sounds like a wrestling move when you're in wrestling. So that's why it's so appropriate. So we're going to talk about what this part of the Aesop transaction, you know, really is. So people that don't know about it maybe can know about it. But there's an element here that I think is really important. So let me just define it real quick as we go, and then we'll talk about, you know, what to prepare for the bring down call. And I'm going to just apologize over and over again. If I keep going back to trying to do Randy Macho Man impersonation, I'm sorry. I just have a hard time not doing it. It's just part of my thing. But anyway, so please bear with me in that. So the takedown bring down call happens at the end of the transaction. So really is scheduled around the time where all the documentation has been reviewed. We've worked through all of the parts and pieces of the closing. And whether you have, you know, a bank involved, you know, you're going to have the bank attorneys doing their thing. You're going to have the trustee and the valuation firms doing their thing in terms of documenting everything that needs to be documented. And then the sell side team, you know, with their ESOP attorney doing all the documents on their side. So you have all this culmination of things that are really, really pretty busy and nuanced and detailed. And there's a lot of back and forth. And so that's important to understand. Like that's really the closing itself is going to be dominated by that. But right at the very end, there's this call that happens with the trustee's valuation firm and the trustee where they're really investigating up into the time of the closing. Is there been any kind of change to the company? And when we talk about that, we're going to get into the idea of what the changes might be. Just so you understand that that's like it's a part of the final finish line. And, you know, and what happens is it's not like a major thing.
if most of the time it's not a major thing because you don't have like major changes happen. If you do, you kind of want to bring those up anyways, you know, through the whole process, which would be part of what we want to talk about. So segueing into that, we're going to get into that a lot more. If you don't know what this ESOP's all about, it's not a wrestling podcast. It's not a movie podcast. It's a podcast that's really designed to help people that are listening, hopefully they are, that want to understand employee stock ownership plans in a way that is a lot more, to me, just very streamlined and hopefully just layman's terms. Like that's one of the goals here is just to make this super, super accessible so that it's not, you don't have to have a PhD in ESOP, whatever college that you might have doesn't exist, but you don't have to do that. You have to just kind of understand like the, how do we break this all down? So today we're going to do that again. Please go to our website at journeytoanesop.com if you have an interest in anything else or other topics, because we have lots and lots of different topics and interviews with different people. And hopefully that you can find answers to what you're looking for on the podcast. So if you like it, please share it with a friend, rate and review the podcast. If you can, give us a 5-star rating. Some people don't know how to do that. I'm one of them, to be honest with you. So I've really struggled with how do you get to the whole rating thing. So don't feel guilty if I keep asking and you can't do that. But either way, thank you for joining today. And we're looking forward to going through this topic.
The Boston Garden, yeah, where Larry Bird plays basketball. Yeah, and the Boston Celtics are a real tough team. But I think that if I played basketball, man, the way I am and the super athlete that I am, I would overshadow Larry Bird. Because on that particular night in Boston, I was the greatest professional wrestler in the world. Oh, proud. Yeah, I'm proud.
You know, a couple of things you don't talk about. The fact that you're a former professional baseball player and also...
Oh, yeah, brother. I'm better than Larry Bird.
So anyway, just you can't not honestly like Randy Macho Man. He's phenomenal. You know, you younger people maybe not recognize him, but check him out on YouTube because he's really cool. So what is this all about? So when we think about the bring down call, the takedown call, what we're talking about is the continuation of due diligence when you get down to it. Now, when we think about the whole ESOP process, and we're going to widen that out a little bit as we started off with, you know, the normal process of doing a transaction is going to kind of finish with this idea of the bring down call. So as the process develops and the company decides, like, I want to be an ESOP, you go through the valuation model, feasibility model, determining like what is the actual amount you're going to sell. Is it 100%? Then you figure out from there, like, you're going to have to hire, you know, the company's going to have to hire a trustee valuation firm for the buy side. That's going to include an attorney. And then on our side, we're going to have an attorney as a sell side. And then eventually you might have a bank participant in it as well with their attorney. So what happens is you go through the whole process of kicking off due diligence and then getting into a lot of the questions that are going to come. Now, these are predominantly going to come from the valuation firm that represents the trustee. And their job, as we talked about, I mean, we've interviewed different valuation firms, their job primarily on the buy side is to help the trustee determine what is adequate consideration for the business, which basically just means what's the fair market value that they're willing to pay in terms of the being the buyer. And so the process of them getting through the due diligence is really making sure they've, you know, answered all the possible questions that might exist for the company, you know, as they go through all the historical financial data and other documents. Of course, there's a lot of different documents for due diligence. And so it gets them up to a certain point. And so what happens is they eventually get to a point where they are ready, the trustee and the valuation team and the attorney are ready for the seller to make the offer. And what happens is the seller makes the offer, the trustee and the valuation firm and the attorney on their side, the buy side, reviews the offer. They're going to come back with a counter offer. And this process goes back and forth. So just kind of giving you a little bit of context when it comes down to the bring down call. So the idea is that they're in and out with this process of negotiation of, hey, we're willing to accept this price, you know, and there's other aspects of negotiation that we're going to want to talk about at a later time, but they're willing to accept this price. So what happens really is the trustee and their valuation firm and the attorney, they go off and they have like this range of value that they're going to go back and forth on. Now, all of that presupposes the information that they have so far, which means that they have already documented everything. They've gotten history and everything else. So we have what is known and knowable. And that is like, from their perspective, what they know about everything, right? At that, up to that point. But now as we go through the process, there's still going to be a couple months that are going to go through. Sometimes not maybe a couple months, but it may be shorter than that. But there still can be months and months added on from the time that we start negotiation, depending on whatever happens. You know, there might be some other issues. So the main thing to keep in mind is that their job, the valuation firm with the trustee and the attorney on the buy side, their job's not finished until the deal is closed. And so when we think about due diligence, it really does start with everything being sent over initially, and it doesn't end for the transaction until really the final bring down call. So keeping that into the idea of what is due diligence for an ESOP transaction, it's really making sure that they have all the information that they need to have that is according to the process, to make sure that if they didn't know about it, then there would be a problem in terms of what they've offered. And now you have this idea of an exposure for the selling shareholders and everything else as if they don't do this correct on both, you know, on their side for the trustee and the valuation firm. So it is really there to make sure that everything has kind of really been buttoned up at the, up to the point of closing. Now, in addition to that, after the closing, there's going to be other follow-up things, which are going to be truing up the working capital and those kind of things. So it is a full-on process that starts, kind of goes through this whole process and as you get into it. So what I want to get into is this idea of what are areas that can change in a company's, maybe it's the financial statement side or whatever, but what are some things specifically that can change that will affect the potentially could affect the, that bring down call? And so what you can be aware of, maybe just making sure that you're not walking into that, not knowing that that's still something that it's not just done at the term sheet stage. There's this formality that happens. So that's what we're going to get into, is this idea of all the specific areas that can change and how you should be thinking about those.
Continental heavyweight champion of the world, Elizabeth, look into the video scope right there. Yes. Look into the video scope and see how proud you are to be the manager of the Macho Man.
I am proud to be the manager of the Macho Man.
I want to ask her a question.
You've told me I can't talk to her, Randy.
I've told you that from time to time. Yes, I have. Would you like to ask her a question right at this particular time? Would you like to do that?
May I?
Oh, yeah. What kind of a question do you want to ask her?
Well, Elizabeth.
You wouldn't give her that flower, would you?
Oh.
If you did that, you know what would happen?
Yeah, I've got a good idea.
You know what would happen if Okerlund gave a flower to Elizabeth? Elizabeth, do you know what would happen?
Well, don't get her in the middle of this. She doesn't.
Man.
Oh, yeah.
That your time is done.
Oh, and man.
I love this scene. Anyway, I'm sorry. If somebody's like, what are you doing, Randy Macho Man? So it's just so funny. Would you like to ask her a question? So let's ask a question. So as we get into this, what could change? So we're in this bring down call. If you fast forward and envision this idea that you're in a bring down call, it's basically the trustee, the valuation firm, obviously the selling shareholders and the client. We're getting, you know, we're kind of at the end of the closing, and they're going to ask you, you know, these questions. Revenue. What has changed? Like, let's talk about revenue. If, you know, one of the things about revenue would be, you know, you're, you know, depending on what time of the year you've closed, right? So, but what's happening is you're kind of, you're refreshing the financials as you go to the trustee and the valuation team, meaning that you're refreshing the interim monthly financial statements. So, hey, are we tracking? One of the questions in that, as they look at it from a pure due diligence standpoint, are we tracking with the forecast that we submitted for that particular year? So if we're in 24, you know, are we on track to hit the 24 revenue estimate? And so could be like, hey, have you lost any major customers? Or, you know, is there any potential to lose a major customer? Or have you, it doesn't have to be just negative news. It has, you know, it could be positive. Have you gained any new customers? Or, you know, It's always nice to come in there and say, hey, we actually are ahead of the forecast, you know, and here's our results and all that. So when it comes to revenue, depending on the customer itself, like the, or the client, the makeup and the composition of that revenue obviously is pretty important. If there is a situation, obviously, where there's a significant amount of concentration, this makes this a much bigger issue, right? Because you have, you know, the potential for, if I had a 10% client or customer, my makes up all my revenue, 15, 20, 30, go on and on. That would be material. And as we start thinking about these levels of, you know, questions regarding the bring down, takedown call, it's material versus not material. And so what does material mean? Like in an accounting audit reference is more about, is it even worth our time to worry about it? And so I think in, you can always kind of in, you know, interpret that materiality in a lot of different ways, but you know, kind of is part of like the size of the transaction would be something that would be notable to be thinking about the size of, as we talk about the adjustments that could happen. What if you had a big, you know, if we go from revenue, we go to the balance sheet real quick and we look at what if we had a big account receivable that we thought we were, you know, we're on track for as we've edged to the closer to the closing, that's moved into the aging and it's pushing in the aging in from 90 to 120 days and like something's happening. What if, you know, if you've got that going on, there might be a material change when it comes to the balance sheet, or you might have, you know, something that you didn't think about, you know, that's going to be represented in the balance sheet that might have been, missed in the first wave of things. So there'll be questions regarding that revenue and, balance sheet issues. There might be questions regarding, you know, the idea of any specific structural change in the company. So if you go non-financial and start thinking about, we had, say, for instance, we have a group of key people. And, you know, when I'll just jump back a step a little bit. When you start thinking about what has been presented in the ESOP to the trustee and the valuation firm is hopefully a pretty good leadership team, right? I mean, and I say that like, I want to be careful, not to say it has to be this comprehensive, complete leadership team. And I think some people get into this, issue when they're planning their ESOP. And I think it's a very valid issue. It's going to be something we'll get deeper into, this season of the podcast, because I think it's definitely some things I've seen push ESOPs out a little bit, which is, hey, I don't have all the exact people I need on my leadership team at this particular moment. So should I just keep waiting and building my leadership team? And that's a tough question, because it may be yes, and it really may be no. And it depends on what the owner, the shareholders are wanting to do after the closing. It depends on whether or not the key leadership is really going to bring up, you know, build a void or bridge a gap that we need, that we have right now that we don't actually haven't really addressed. And because of that, we have a material weakness in the company. So it really kind of depends. So as you think about that, the company has contemplated and really presented, hey, this is our leadership team. So by this point, by the bring down, takedown call, at this point, their trustee and evaluation firm already have in their mind, like, this is who's running the company, right? This is who's really going to be part of how they think about the future performance of the company. And so obviously, if we lost a key person, and this has happened, and I've had that happen on closings before, maybe a month before a closing, we lost a key person. And I mean, my first go about on this, forget the bring down, take down call. If it happens, I'm going to be like the first one to tell the client on my side, hey, we need to just tell them what's going on, keep them informed, and then let's kind of move through that issue and talk about the impact of that with the trustee. So as long as you do that, I mean, it's really about, you know, being transparent and sharing information as you go. So as long as you do that, I think it's totally cool. But the main thing is, like, in this scenario, we lost a key person. It was the number two person, actually, the person that was going to take over the role of the principal, like the main shareholder. And fortunately for him, he had some people like that he had known another person that had actually worked for the company that he had been in contact with. And actually in this and that story, we were able to actually place somebody even before the closing. And where it was kind of not funny, but it was kind of like the silver lining of it all was that that actually was a better person than what he had before, which who knows if that can happen for some people. I do know there's a tremendous amount of anxiety in with key people. And part of the reason we're doing an ESOP is to really address some things for the key people so they can feel, you know, like, hey, I've got a good opportunity going forward when the ESOP gets laid out. And we want them to feel like they're that we're not actually taking a step back in their career, but that actually we're taking a step forward. And then here are the reasons why. So really, you know, if you do have a key person issue that we want to be careful to disclose that. Now, there's other areas that we could talk about. Now, if you think about some of the things that are just common sense, like anything that has just arisen in the next, you know, that nobody really knows about that you feel is significant, I think it's going to qualify. Like if I was the valuation firm for the trustee, I might ask the question, like anything and everything that you might want to disclose that you feel like is significant that has changed that we didn't know about. I would kind of capture everything there. But so things like for instance, you know, we've been tracking some of the political legislation that affects our business. And they just voted to pass this one bill, and we think that's going to have an impact. That could be obviously pretty material and something if you knew about, you'd want to disclose that. other things that are like not necessarily as obviously legislative, but maybe even just, you know, litigation or pending lawsuits, which you're going to want to deal with that initially in your due diligence anyways. But let's just say in the two weeks before the closing, you get some filing of some lawsuit against the company. Obviously, that's going to be brought up in this bring down, takedown call. So it's now what happens is, you know, as you go through this, right, you're not trying to like, you definitely don't want to like not disclose something that could be discovered later and found to be a problem. You know, even if it's it's a minor thing. But what you do want to do is have that internal conversation with your advisor and start making a list of anything that you believe might be material as you get closer and closer to the closing and start bouncing off, hey, what would this effect have on the deal itself, right? What material change to cash flow could there be, for instance? What material change to the risk of the profile risk of the company? What potential change could really come at the company where, you know, they thought they were doing this and they have to kind of, you know, change courses, and nobody likes that really. And so if I went backwards a little bit, one of the things I think an advisor, sell side advisor would do, you know, and I want to kind of put this into its proper place, because I really think the bring down, takedown call, it should never be an issue, right? And the reason I say that, and it's really, for me, it's much more of a formality than it is anything, because if you do your work correctly at the front end of the deal, you should be, as an advisor, your advisor, whoever you're using, right, should be really preparing you for those types of questions way early in the process. And so I was going to take a little bit of a step back to the beginning of things, because I think it's important for you to be thinking about this as you might be in a position where you're hiring somebody to do your ESOP transaction, sell side advisor, and you're working through that course and trying to figure out, like, is this the right provider? And depending on decision-making factors are and how you're choosing them, just keep this in mind. I mean, one of the things I think they should bring up early in the process as you interview them is this idea of, like, how do you, if you're the client, right, and you're asking the question to the advisor, how do you help prepare us as a company for this potential, the inevitable due diligence and questions and bring down calls. So some of that might have something to do, obviously, with, you know, as they come up with your number, right? What I mean by that number is like your valuation number, which would include not only enterprise value, it would also include the target working capital number. And, you know, some level of evaluation regarding the financial probability of your forecast as it relates back to the review, whether it's a formal business plan or an informal business plan, but the review of the business plan, the strategic plan, and all the things that go into that. And so really one of the things about hiring the right advisor is that you should not have the bring down, take down call really should be just to check the box, to be honest with you. If you're kind of going into your closing and this is a surprise to you, well, that's not good, right? That's not something we want you to be facing. You should have dealt with all those things. And know also that anything that does pop up, the advisor should be saying to you, like, look, hey, tell us what's happening. Make sure you're communicating changes in the company. One of the things I look for in my first, like, you know, I think sometimes every client has a different perspective on, you know, this process, right? And I think a lot of times there's this sense that, you know, for what I do for a client as a sell-side advisor, they might think, hey, you know, you're just lucky to get this opportunity to be our sell-side advisor. And I'm like, well, I get that. And I am thankful to work with really cool clients and all of that. I mean, I'm not going to kind of like say that's not true, but I also am looking for things in that first two phases of work to make sure I want to be representing them, you know? And one of the things I'm looking for is what's the character of the client, you know, in terms of, are they telling me everything, right? I mean, the worst thing I can imagine is like, and this is one of the things I like about the process that I go through, which is to, you know, go through, it's really for the client for the most part, but it's for me too, is to see how they're going to function and react when we're talking about very important things like the valuation and like the impact of the ESOP on their company and their key people and their employees. You know, I'm looking to see, is this really in terms of character? And I don't want to try to make somebody sound like they're a bad guy or not a bad guy, but sometimes an ESOP's not right for a company because their minds are so fixated on one of these elements and not all of these elements. And so, but like, let's just say that's kind of like, that's here nor there. But the main thing I'm trying to point out is that if the client's not disclosing to me their advisor on things that they're thinking or have going on in their company, I'm out of there, you know, because I'm not going to be sitting in a closing call and be like, you know, sitting there thinking, wow, if I didn't know that from my client, you know, what else haven't they told, you know, the trustee? Because I feel very, even though this is so true, like, as I say this, I don't have any risk when it comes to putting a transaction together as a sell-side advisor. No sell-side advisors for ESOP transactions have any type of risk when it comes down to it. The people that have risk are the trustees as fiduciaries to the trust, the valuation firms that work for the trustees. So writing fairness opinions and being, you know, this is their part of what they have to do to prove out. That's their documentation. And that's going to be what the Department of Labor is going to look at. So if that's, you know, for me, it's not that I'm worried about the risk part. I just think it's wrong, you know, and I don't want to lead somebody into an ESOP if that's the way that they're going to be thinking, you know, and I don't want to be, honestly, I don't want to have them as client. And so that comes to like some of the things about client selection process, some of the things that make a really healthy company, a really healthy business, you know, incorporate some of these ideas of what is a good company, what is a healthy company. Client selection is very important. So I think that if we go through this whole idea of the bring down, take down call, the main thing is just prepare to know that you're going to have this very final call at the end, and it should be a formality. It should be pretty, just, hey, 15 minutes tops, to be honest with you. And that just gives everybody the assurance that they've asked those questions and verbally you have disclosed whatever that is. So that basically is part of the way they protect themselves in the process. So hopefully that helps you. I haven't seen, to be honest with you, a lot of information on the bring down, take down call. So, and not to say that there's not information out there, but it's probably something that people don't really think about. But I do think it's important for you to understand it and know about it, just like other topics that we have on the podcast. Thanks so much for listening today. And I hope that as you go forward on your journey to an ESOP, this is helpful to you. And again, check our website at journeytoanesop.com. Share this with a friend if you think it's going to be helpful. And have a wonderful day. And we'll see you on our next step on this journey to an ESOP.